UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merger 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And it is
dispatch.
Bob, I swear to God, four calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty. Four calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. Hello everyone and welcome to the podcast, wherever in the world and off-world you are listening from. How have you all been? My name is Nick Hunter and this is the UFO Chronicles podcast. Roddy in the state of Indiana kicks us off tonight with his encounter from childhood and an experience from when he was 16 driving home from a date when a brilliant light followed his vehicle. Then Rod's next memory, he was parked on the side of the road and it was 4 hours later. Then we connect with Nick in Pennsylvania and his UFO sighting in Bucks County in 2008, when he witnessed two black triangles. Terrified and not being able to process what he was seeing, he sped off home, only later realizing he wasn't alone in his sighting and countless others had also witnessed the same thing and what later became known as the Bucks County Flap. Roddy up next. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal. And if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Welcome, Roddy, to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today, and you're calling from Indiana.
Yes, sir. Newcastle, Indiana. Crossroads of America.
Crossroads of America. Wonderful. Now, Roddy, you have some strange experiences to share with our listeners. Would you like to start at the very beginning, please, sir?
I sure will. It all started in my childhood. Growing up, we believed that the house was haunted. I don't really think it was haunted. I think there was something else there. During my childhood, I saw, I guess at night when I'm sleeping, not really sleeping, I would hear noises. It was like a clicking sound, like a, you know, it wasn't speech. It was like a click. I had a reoccurring nightmare that I would see like different colors, like a green, yellow, blue. It was like lights on the top of a police car, but it wasn't, you know, the white and blue, you know, lights that you see. There was additional lights there. That was like they would go in and out. And I had this reoccurring dream. And one of the times that I remember, it was around Christmas time, and I had a Hot Wheels track set up in my living room. I would say it was late at night, maybe 3 a.m, and I remember hearing somebody playing with my Hot Wheels. They were, you know, it could have been my father, it could have been my mother, but I can't see my father out there playing with my Hot Wheels at 3 o'clock in the morning. I just can't. But, you know, there was somebody playing with it. And as I heard that, you know, I heard the clicking and I felt something coming towards me. I don't know what it was. You know, even to this day, I don't know what it was. But I could feel a presence coming closer and closer and closer to me. And of course, I was frozen in bed because I was, you know, 8, 9 years old. So, I mean, I was scared to death, not really knowing what was going on. My next memory, you know, of them coming in to my room, I woke up the next morning and, you know, nothing had changed. Nothing was different. I was still, you know, me, and, you know, my Hot Wheels were back in where they were when I, you know, when I started. But, you know, this was a, you know, a reoccurring throughout my, you know, childhood. And then about 81, I was a sophomore in high school. I had went and picked up a girl. I was going to take her to a dance at my local high school. Well, we get there, and of course, you know, it wasn't me that she wanted to go with. She wanted to go with someone else. But, you know, I was the excuse. So, you know, she was dancing with everybody else. And of course, I'm like, you know, I don't think so. So I go get her and I decide to take her home. So it's probably about 11 o'clock at night. I drop her off at her house. You know, goodbye. Have a great day. Thanks. Sorry, things didn't work out. But as I'm driving home, it's only about 12 miles between from where I dropped her off to where I live. In my rear view mirror, I see this light that is just simply blinding. In my mind, it is somebody on a motorcycle that is behind me that's just so close that this light is, you know, it's on me. I'm driving a 1978 Chrysler Newport. Of course, this thing is a boat. You know, it's a huge vehicle. And, you know, I maybe haven't had my license for a year. So, you know, I mean, I knew what I was doing. I knew what I was driving. And I, you know, thought something was behind me. So the next thing I know, it's 4.5 hours later. And I'm sitting on the side of the road, just sitting there. I look out my front window and I see, I don't know exactly what it was, but it looked to me as if it was a luminescent creature. Of course, the car is, you know, the hood of that car is probably 3 feet in the air. So I could just barely see the tops of their heads. I couldn't see their bodies. I couldn't see what else was there because the car was so high. And at that same time, when I started to wake up, there was a fire inside the car. Up inside the dash, there was, you know, smoke, you know, in the cabin. I mean, in the car, there was, you know, quite a bit of smoke. So I rolled down the window and, you know, of course, the smoke goes out and whatever these creatures were just disappeared. I never saw a craft. I never saw, you know, anything other than what they were above, you know, like I said, the hood of the car. But, you know, looking back now, like I said, it was like 4 o'clock in the morning. I had lost, you know, four and a half hours of time, you know, just sitting along the side of the road. I mean, what happened during that time frame? I have absolutely no idea where I went, what happened. So, you know, at that point, I turned the car on and I, you know, proceeded on home. I mean, I was probably 5 minutes from my house at that point. You know, I got home and, you know, of course, the next day my parents were like, you know, well, what happened to this car? I'm like, you know, at this point, I don't remember if I told them about what happened to me, but I knew there was something going on, you know, in that car with the fire. And it did almost $500 worth of damage, you know, to this vehicle, whatever that fire was. You know, could it have been the ashtray that caught on fire? It's possible, but that's not what I remember. You know, I remember, you know, the smoke going through the cabin and, you know, whatever it was that caused that fire, they also put it out as well. You know, could that have been something that they had done? Like I said, you know, I don't know. I don't remember that. And it seems like over the years, I have remembered more about that night. It just seems that my memories have gotten more and more that I remember. But as far as the recollection of what happened during that, you know, missing time, I have no idea. I would love to go into a regression with someone and to find out exactly what, you know, what actually happened, where I was, and, you know, what they had done to me. You know, and things continue to these, you know, to this day. When I, some of the times, probably about maybe once a month, maybe twice a month, as I close my eyes at night, I see a star field. And it's like, you know, it's there. And, you know, I don't know what the star field is, but it's stars that I see. And I'm like, okay, you're here to get me tonight. So, you know, in my mind, I'm telling them it's okay. As far as I know, they never tried to harm me. You know, I don't have a bad experience. You know, when I was a kid, I mean, of course, I was terrified. But now, as, you know, as I'm looking back, you know, I still have that reoccurring dream that, you know, like I said, when I close my eyes and it's, you know, it's different now. It's like I'm accepted. It's like I know they're here. And as I said, I know they're not here to hurt me, to harm me. You know, and to even make this a little bit more interesting, I have a granddaughter. She, at the time, was probably about 2 years old. And on her left hand, right, like in the palm of her hand, there was something that was on the palm of her hand. It was like a donut inside a donut inside a donut. But it was probably no bigger than maybe, you know, the end of an eraser. But it was in the palm of her hand. And as weeks went by, you could still see this thing, but it was as if it was burrowing itself inside her hand. So I think this is a generational thing. I think that, you know, they come back, and I think that, you know, they, you know, take our family. I think it's something that, you know, they've been doing this for years and years and years. You know, one of the things that, you know, that pops into my mind is if you ever watch National Geographic and how we go out and we catch the whale and we put a tag on it, or we catch the shark and we put, you know, some kind of tag on it and, you know, take its, you know, reproductive things and things of this nature. And, you know, we've all seen that happen on National Geographic where, you know, we go out and we shoot, you know, shoot the animal with a, you know, tranquilizer dart or whatever. So, you know, they're not, you know, stressed out when they're examined or taken. And, you know, to me, that's, you know, we're the National Geographic animals that they're coming down and checking out. I don't believe they're, you know, here hostile. I'm not so sure. Well, I have something as well that I've done a little bit of research into this because, you know, it's been part of my life. So, you know, I believe that we are the animals, that they are coming down and they are, you know, coming to us and say, hey, we're not here to harm you, but we're going to, you know, we're here to help you, or, you know, to move you along or whatever, you know, is going on. You know, like they said before, you know, there's different, you know, possible alien species that are out there. And some of the research that I've actually done here in America, since 1990, there is an average of 750,000 people that go missing every year. Now, if you look at it, that out of 750,000 people that disappear in America each year, okay, let's just say maybe half are serial killers. Okay, maybe a quarter of that are just people that have gone, you know, to wherever and, you know, just disappear. They just don't want to be found. Well, you know, that still leaves, you know, almost 250,000 people that just disappear every year and there's no trace of where they have gone. Predation, maybe animals, you know, take them, but maybe, you know, the aliens that have, you know, contacted me, maybe they're not the only ones that are out there doing these things. You know, even going back to National Geographic, if you look at, you know, sometimes they have taken these animals, you know, put them in zoos, put them in, you know, on display. You know, some of these places you go in and, you know, there's animals that have been stuffed. Okay, maybe we're the stuffed animals and, you know, and they're, you know, part of the, you know, universe. You know, we just don't know. But, you know, as for me, I know something happened. What happened to me? I just can't honestly say what happened to me because I'm not sure. I know there's a, you know, missing time of 4 hours that I can't explain. I know the light that was behind me is something that I cannot explain. I would love to be able to find that car and, you know, examine it, but that car's been around for so long, I'm sure it's probably been crushed by now. But you know, the possibility of, you know, being able to investigate and find out exactly, you know, there could be a record, you know, in my local, you know, auto dealer that goes back that far, but that's, you know, that's unlikely. That's back before computers and back before, you know, that's back when we were writing everything down, you know, unfortunately. But like I said, there's just, you know, there's no way to prove what I have, but, you know, through regression, I think that they could help me remember and see exactly, well, maybe not exactly, but, you know, for the most part, what happened to me during that 4 hours. And to me, I would love to be able to find that information out. I think that would, you know, change things, you know, for the better or maybe even for the worse. I'm not sure. But for the most part, that would be something that I would really like to, you know, have happen. You know, really, other than that, that's, you know, that's basically my story.
And of course, regression, you know, it may fill in some gaps, you know, that's missing from those encounters.
Yes.
When you were a child, when you were 10 years old and they were playing with your Hot Wheels, you said you heard like a clicking and you considered it like speech?
Yes, exactly like speech. Like if they were communicating to one another, but, you know, of course, I wasn't capable of understanding what they were saying, but it was like a click, click, you know, but, and it, you know, just weird, very, you know, very odd.
And the sound kept getting closer and closer to you.
Yes, they would get closer and closer to me. It was as if they were coming right towards me, and that's, you know, as the light got closer as well, the speech or the click, you know, became more prevalent, but I could hear it, you know, louder and louder. It's coming towards me.
And then your next memory of that, everything would have subsided, that nothing else would be happening.
I'd wake up the next morning and, you know, I'm laying in my bed and, you know, nothing has changed, you know.
And this was something which happened regularly.
Yes. Well, of course, not the Hot Wheels, because, you know, the Hot Wheels weren't there, you know, on a regular basis, but they would come into my room, you know, it seemed like on a regular basis, because I had that reoccurring nightmare throughout my entire childhood.
Okay. Your second encounter when you were 16 years old. So you were driving home from a date. You had this brilliant light behind you. How long would it stay behind you?
Probably about a mile, I would say, before it stopped, or, you know, before I stopped, I suppose. Now, when I was driving home, I remember seeing the light. There's a small town called Cleveland. That's where I saw the light. And when I woke up, I was probably 8 miles further along the road from where I first saw the light. So I don't know, you know, how I got to where I was at, and how I got pulled over to the side of the road. But as I said, it was a considerable difference in, you know, from where I was from where I first saw that light.
Interesting. And would you periodically look over your shoulder, or would you just view it in the wing mirrors?
I was, you know, looking at it from, you know, from behind. I could see it in both of the, you know, the side mirrors and also the rear mirror. You couldn't, you know, I couldn't see anything else because the light was so bright behind me that, you know, you couldn't see anything behind me, you know, besides the light. That's all you could see, was just that light that was behind me. Like I said, it was a blinding light. You know, like I said, I thought it might have been something, you know, like a motorcycle or something, but it just, you know, no noise. I don't remember hearing anything. But of course, you know, as a young kid, I probably had my radio on and, you know, doing the young kid thing, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's certainly a shame that you don't have that night. Was it 1978 Chrysler Newport?
Yep, 1978 Chrysler Newport. That thing was a boat.
But it was a beauty.
It was. Chrysler was the thing back in those days. So yes, it was a pretty good car.
Yeah, you probably should have held on to your Chrysler as well as your Hot Wheels. They probably would have been worth quite a lot of money these days.
Yes, they sure, most especially the Hot Wheels. Yes,
they are collectible.
And my mother loved the Hot Wheels track too when I was bad. Let's just put it that way. I'm not going to say she beat me, but let's just say the Hot Wheels track, you know, that stuff was deadly when you were a kid.
Yeah, we had scare electrics, so that was it was the same situation then as well. The fire that was on the dash. Do you remember what type of fire it was? Was it like electrical?
It was electrical, yes. It was up in the electrical system, the wiring system up inside the, because it burned out the radio, but it didn't affect the car because I was still able to drive it.
But it was like the electrics were fried.
Yes, exactly, yes. And it really wasn't a fire. It was more smoke. It was, you know, it was like, you know, like something had, you know, burned, not something that had, you know, like a, you know, big fire. It was just, you know, it was dry. It was smoking. And there was an ashtray there. I mean, you know, it could have, you know, but I don't, at that age, I wasn't smoking or anything of that nature. So, you know, it's not something that I would have put a cigarette, you know, cigarette out in and, you know, caught it on fire. I, you know, I, like I said, I was 16 years old. I wasn't smoking. You know, that wasn't that.
Right. Okay. And you recollect some beings just above the hood?
I do. Yes. You know, like I said, all I could really see was their head. And like, I'm just going to throw it, Close Encounters of the First Kind, how you could see, you know, like the luminesce that they were. That's, you know, that's what I saw was the luminesce. It wasn't, you know, features. I don't remember, you know, features. It looked more like a ghost or an entity of that nature rather than, you know, like a human. I mean, they didn't, you know, it wasn't, you know, it didn't look like us.
Right. So definitely not human.
No. Luminescent. Like I said, it looked more ghostly than anything else. Like, you know, Casper or something, you know, like it was, you know, like they had a light in themselves. Like they were the light.
So giving off kind of like a glow.
Yeah.
What about your kids themselves? You mentioned your granddaughter.
Well, the only thing that I would imagine, my son is, I'm not going to say he's brilliant. Okay, but he's brilliant. He's mathematics to him are simple. In seventh grade, he was taking, was it sixth grade? Sixth grade when he moved here. In sixth grade, he was taking algebra 2. You know, he's a math teacher now. He's teaching calculus to, you know, to a high school, you know, students. And, you know, mathematics to him is just, you know, it's simplistic. I'm certainly not like that. My ex-wife is certainly not like that. So where did that come from? You know, I don't know. But, you know, to me, there's something there. Now, you know, one of the things that I look at, too, is look where humanity has come in the past 80 years. We have advanced more in the last 80 years than we have in the past 50,000 as humanity. I mean, our computers, our cars, you know, back in World War II, we didn't even have a jet. And we've got jets now that can go, you know, 2,000-3,000 miles an hour, if not faster. You know, and we have, you know, humanity has just expanded in the past 80 years. Where did that technology, I mean, did, you know, just all of a sudden overnight, we just became, you know, intelligent? Or is this something, you know, given to us? You know, that's what I'm, you know, to me, there's something that has changed humanity in the past 80 to 100 years. Because as I said, humanity has come so far in the past 80 years compared to, you know, as I said, the past, according to the Bible, the past 5,000 years. Well, in reality, you know, it's probably the past 50, if not 100, maybe even a million years that humanity has been here. And we have just all of a sudden changed and turned into something that, you know, horse and buggy, you know, for thousands of years. And just all of a sudden, you know, if you see a horse and buggy on the road, you're like, oh my gosh, you know, what is this thing? You know, it's just not the norm anymore. And, you know, something has put a fire underneath humanity. And leaps and bounds, you know, we have changed. You know, looking back, you know, Roswell, is Roswell the starting point? Was it before Roswell? Was when humanity happened across maybe something in that desert, things changed? Because if you look there, I mean, after that is when things really started to ramp up. And humanity's where we are today. And they, you know, they say our computer capability is, you know, expanding every 2 or 3 years to, you know, to where 3 years ago, you know, it was like the Ice Age, you know, and it just keeps changing faster and faster and faster. What has happened to us to give us, you know, where we are today? Something's happened. Something has changed us. You know, hopefully I would think it would be for the better, but, you know, I don't know. You know, they talk about UFOs and, you know, around nuclear power plants, how they seem to be, you know, interested in our nuclear power plants. Well, maybe that's what started them looking at us in the first place, is when we, you know, blew up that first atomic bomb. I mean, goodness, we've detonated thousands since, you know, the first one that we've exploded. luckily we never, you know, sent it to anybody else, but, you know, we've exploded, you know, thousands of them here in the United States. And maybe that's what they saw. Maybe that's why they're here. Hopefully it'll be to, you know, say, hey, stupid, you know, you shouldn't be doing these. You know, there has been a big change in the past 80 years to humanity. And what changed that? Your guess is as good as mine, but something changes.
It's a lot like when you've got an adult and there's a child and they're playing with matches. I think that's probably how they look at us when it comes to nuclear weapons, danger.
Yes.
It's in the wrong hands.
Yes, I believe so. I mean, you know, are we the ants to them? You know, we look down to the ant. We see this small little creature down there that, you know, is very, you know, hey, they're, you know, building all kinds of things. They're doing great, you know, and we leave them alone. They'll, you know, keep living and keep growing. Well, maybe the same thing, you know, is with us. Maybe they're watching us saying, you know, but they're, maybe they're also saying, hey, you know, these nuclear things are a problem. You need to fix this. And, you know, a lot of people say, you know, I want to see a UFO land on the, you know, White House lawn. Well, you know, that's probably never going to happen. But they keep taking pictures off these naval planes, you know, naval ships, and they see this stuff that's going on. Well, there's something going on out there. If they ever come to us and say, yes, there is something going on, but, you know, it seems like a lot of centrifuge just to, you know, keep you confused of what this may or may not be. So they probably don't want us to really know what, you know, what it is, if they do know.
Right, right.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, you know, with humanity, I think the biggest problem, maybe why we haven't been contacted, you know, we as a species can't get along with each other, you know, due to religion, due to race, you know, your color, your skin, you know, and until humanity grows beyond that, that, you know, hey, you know, I'm the same thing as you are. I'm a human. You know, we're all humans here. It doesn't matter, you know, what your religion is or, you know, what your sexual orientation is or, you know, your skin color. It doesn't matter. We're all the same. Humanity is humanity. And until humanity gets there, you know, maybe we're not worth contacting.
Yeah, I'm in size degree with you there. And I think a lot of the time when people do have contact, it's on a personal basis. You know, they're not reaching out to the military. They're not landing on a base or anything. They're literally just reaching out to normal people.
Yes.
And these encounters are happening all over the world. And they have done for a long time. And I think that's probably what they're doing, a personal one-to-one.
Yes. It talks in the Bible about that. You know, people had been, was it Isaiah, I believe, was taken off in a ship. And, you know, and he talks about the round of the earth. And, you know, it's, they're talking 2,000 years ago, and this individual knows about the round of the earth. Well, how could, you know, unless you saw that, how would you know that?
Exactly.
You know, and they talk about, you know, a ship. Well, you know, if a ship came down and picked him up, if it's God, why does God need a ship? You have to question that. You know, why, you know, person as a God, why would he need a ship to come down to take someone to someplace else? You know, if he's God, he can, you know, snap his fingers and say, okay, here it is. Take someone off the planet in a ship. You know, it's...
Exactly. Well, God is omnipresent, so he shouldn't need it.
Exactly, yes. You know, if you take the word angel and you replace it with the word alien in the Bible, there's a lot of questions there that could possibly be answered. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that every encounter in the Bible is from an alien rather than an angel, but, you know, there's a lot of angel references inside that Bible. I believe, you know, some of them encounters could actually be from other beings. And, you know, they're explaining, you know, to us that they didn't know what a ship was. They didn't know what a plane was. They didn't know, you know, to go off the earth. They had no, you know, no concept of that. You know, how would they explain that in their language during that time? They, you know, they wouldn't. They didn't have the, you know, they didn't know, you know, about any of that. You know, the planets, you know, they didn't know. You're looking up in the sky and saying, you know, well, these planets are, you know, stars, or these stars are planets. They just looked up and said, oh, you know, those are really neat. I wonder what those are, you know, unless somebody told them.
Well, they're angels. Angels are the messengers.
Exactly. They're messengers. They're messengers to us. And they make contact with us, you know, and that's, I think the same thing's happening today. They are the angels. And they're here to, you know, look over us, to protect us, you know, hopefully protect us from our own stupidity. You know, there's, you know, somebody's finger is always on that button. And, you know, luckily someone's been smart enough to not press that button. And we're still here today.
We'll keep that person away from that button and lock the door.
Absolutely.
The encounters that you've had over the years, has it sparked an interest in this with you?
Oh, it has sparked all kinds of interest, yes. I'm actually in the process of writing a book about, you know, what happened to me. And also, I mean, I've done a lot of research. Like, you know, like I said, the research that I've, you know, done about the missing people. Now, here's a little something. Now, during the 1990s, when the Clintons were in office, I'm not saying they had anything involved here, but there was an additional 250,000 people a year that disappeared when the Clintons were in office. I'm not saying anything. I'm just showing the facts. But there was an additional 250,000 people a year when they were in office. You know, I don't know, but it happened, okay?
Roddy, don't make me a marked man. By the Clintons, there's enough suspicious activity surrounding that foundation.
I'm just doing, that's all I'm saying. Well, thank you for taking the time to listen to my story. I appreciate that.
Well, Roddy, I really appreciate you for coming on and sharing all that for our listeners.
Been my pleasure. Thank you very much.
No problem. It's been great talking to you. Okay. You enjoy the rest of your day. I know it's still warm.
95 right now.
95. That's wonderful, Roddy. Okay. Keep in contact. All right. And I'll talk to you soon.
Fantastic. Thank you, Nick. I appreciate it very much.
All right. Take care, Roddy.
All right, Nick. Thank you.
The 40th Film Festival is a new celebration of cinema, created by people who have a passion for all things weird and paranormal. The current season is now open for submissions. Get involved if you're a filmmaker that has a penchant for poltergeists and adores aliens, or if you're a producer devoted to demonology with a soft spot for sci-fi. The deadline for submissions to this IMDb-approved festival is fast approaching. Go to www.fortianfilmfestival.com to submit your film or buy tickets, if you dare.
Hello, Nick, and welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Nick. Pleasure to meet you, sir.
Thank you for joining us today. Calling from Pennsylvania.
Yep. Havertown, PA, which is a suburb of Philadelphia.
Wonderful. I've had several of my guests, actually, from Pennsylvania in the last few weeks, actually. Now, Nick, you have an experience to share with our listeners from one night in 2008?
Absolutely. So, Mike, I was working as an administrator, as actually associate dean at a tech school. And I also taught there. I should say that prior to this particular experience, I had no interest in UFOs either way. I wasn't a skeptic. I wasn't a debunker. It just was a subject that was there that I really didn't have much of an opinion on either way. I wasn't so closed-minded to say, you know, it's impossible, but I wasn't either a true believer. It just was something in the ambiance, right? So on this particular night in 2008, it would have been summer. We'll say it was July. It was a while ago. Could have been August, but I think it was July. I was there at night. I had to, you know, I worked some days. I worked some nights. This particular evening, I happened to be working at night. Part of my job responsibilities was to finish up teaching the class. I think I hung around a little later doing grading, then kind of to kick everybody out of school, you know, just for the night, not like expel them, right? But just make sure that the school was vacated. Turn off all the lights, set the alarm, lock up and drive home. And I lived about an hour away from the school. So this particular school, it was a tech school, and it was located, I would say, about a half a mile to a quarter of a mile away from the main road in a business park, right? So at the time, I was driving a black convertible. It was a really nice night, beautiful July night, stars in the sky, beautiful temperature, perfect. So, and I like, you know, I used to like back then driving with the top down at night, no air conditioning, just cool breeze. So my car is the only car in the lot. I get into the car, I pull out, and I'm driving down this road that leads, you know, a fairly narrow two-way road, one lane each side that leads in and out of this particular business park. And the speed limit was 15 miles per hour, and it was, or might have even been 10, I don't remember now, but it was slow. And even though it was like midnight by the time I got out of there, around midnight, you obey that speed limit because it was a speed trap, and students would always get nailed, you know, driving like 30 in a 10 miles per hour, you know, speed limit, will get nailed with a ticket. And so I just always would take my time getting out of there. And I mentioned all that, the T-top, the fact that I was driving very slowly, because I might have missed it otherwise. But I'm driving and I look over to the left, I would say around 10 or 11 o'clock, okay, in the sky. And I didn't know what these things were, Nick. Like, I never heard. Now I'm very much aware of them. But I see these two black triangles. And I'm like driving and I look up to my, again, like to my left. And I'm like, what the heck are those things? Thought I was going to crash into a tree. Now, they weren't bam right in front of me. I would say from my vantage point, if you were to get this perspective, the bigger one, the one that appeared to be closer, would have maybe been the width of your thumb if you held out your arm outstretched. And there was one that was behind it that was a little bit further in the distance and therefore from your perspective, a little bit smaller. But it's very difficult to judge height or distance because there's really no reference point from where I was looking. So I'm driving and I'm like, oh, and when I say classic black triangle, what I mean is there were lights on the tips, black, you know, matte black, and then a like reddish orange, larger light in the center. Now, I knew nothing about black triangles at this time. Didn't know that they were a thing. Okay. Didn't know that they were a thing. And I'm driving. And then I just said, like, I stopped my car. Okay. I just put the brakes on and I just stared at these things. And I was pretty much gobsmacked. And I'm just trying to analyze them. I'm going through my head. I'm saying, you know, what could these possibly be? What type of object A looks like this? B can stay rock steady silent, like no drift. So it couldn't have been a kite, couldn't have been a drone, dead silent, no noise. What are they? And I'm like, what are these? Are these UFOs? Like, am I having a UFO moment? Am I an experiencer, a witness to UFO? And I remember like my brain just kind of not being able to process what I was seeing. These UFOs were hovering, these black triangles were hovering over a construction site at the time, but slightly to the left of a construction site. I stayed there for a minute. They weren't right in front of me. And what I was noticing is that if I continued down that road, I would eventually get to a main road. To get home, I would make a left. Now, this road was pretty well traveled, you know, pretty well traveled road, pretty congested during the day. And then, but even at midnight, there was still the occasional car that was driving by. And it kind of made me think, like, why aren't these other cars reacting to what I'm seeing, these black triangles? So I said, you know, I gotta solve this mystery. I gotta figure out what these things are. You know, maybe if I get a different look or a different vantage point of these UFOs or whatever they are, I'll be silly. I'll have egg on my face. Oh, Nick, you silly guy. Like, this is just this, you know, a logical, reasonable explanation. So I got back in my car. And to be honest, you know, memory is faulty. I don't know if I actually physically got out or if I stayed in my car, but I definitely stopped the car, pulled over to the side for however long observing these things. And I drove slowly to, you know, the intersection. There was a red light. I was looked there a little bit bigger now because I'm a little bit closer. Still can't figure out what these things are. So I make a right at the red. Okay, and instead of going left, and I said, you know what? I'll make a U-turn and I'll go in the opposite direction and I will try to go down a road and maybe get closer to them. Maybe then I'll figure out what they are. So I did that. I made a right. I made a U-turn. Now, you know, it's hard to kind of like visualize, but now as I'm driving, whereas the UFOs, when I was on the original road, would have been like maybe like 10 or 11 o'clock on my left-hand side. Now they would have been 10 or 11 o'clock on my right-hand side, and I'm approaching them. And I'm getting closer, and there's a red light, right? So I stop for the red light, and now it's almost like where I was at, these things were like at, say, maybe 2 o'clock, right? And I'm closer to them. It was a weird psychology, Nick. I'll be honest with you. I'm stopped at this red light. I'm waiting. And I just glanced up now to my right, just glanced up for a second, and bam. Now these things are somewhat good deal closer and I can get a better glimpse of them. I will tell you that they terrified me. I no longer wanted to get close to them. I no longer cared about the mystery of what these things are. My brain had figured out process that it's almost like reptilian instinct, survival instincts comes over. I have no idea what these things are. They're black triangles. They have white tips at the corner. They have a reddish light, larger light underneath center. There's two of them. One's behind the other. And these might be extraterrestrial spacecraft. I don't know. And I'm stopped at this red light and, you know, I obey the laws of traffic. I don't want to, there's no real traffic on the road at that time of night on this particular road. Again, like I said, some cars passing by every now and then when I was waiting for them previously, but there was no cars at this moment when I stopped at this light. And I looked up again, and that's when I realized that, you know, the expression, the hairs like rise up on the back of your neck, that wasn't an expression. That was, I was never more, well, it was one of the few times I could say I was absolutely filled with fear from these things. And so as the light changed, okay, the light changed and, well, let me back up. I was like, do I blow this red light? I'm going to blow this red light. And just as I stepped on the pedal, the light changed, like maybe midway through, you know, it just was a timing thing. And I sped off down that road. You know, I just basically sped all the way home. And I just was kind of in another world. I just could not get away from those things fast enough. So I get home and I thought I was going to, you know, be up all night, but I didn't. I fell fast asleep, got up in the morning, felt kind of weird. Like, just couldn't get my mind off of them. What were these things? What were these things? But, you know, I mentioned it to one coworker, and then I knew, like, I'll never go there again. I just got to look, you know, like, I don't even want to hear this. So I just kept it to myself, you know. Life goes on. You never really forget about it, but, you know, what are you going to do? Like, just stop working and just think about UFOs all day long? No. You go to work every day, and you come home, you meet your family, you have dinner, da-da-da. You know, you go on with your life. And I would say maybe it was around, this would have happened in July, and I would say maybe it was around November, right? I hadn't thought about it for a while. And I'm just channel surfing, you know, I'm watching, you know, cable channel surfing. And what I see is, you know, a special on UFO. Actually, I don't think it was a special. It was an episode of UFO Hunters, okay, that was being advertised. You know, I think it was on History Channel. I forget what cable station it was on. I think it was History. And I see, you know, if people are familiar with that show, UFO Hunters, back then, it was Bill Burns, William Burns, I believe his name was, UFO Magazine, that guy. Well, he did a whole special on the Bucks, what was called the Bucks County Wave. And that's what I was a part of. And so, of course, I couldn't believe it. I was in shock. So many people had seen these black triangles in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, which is exactly where I was working, which is exactly where the school was. So many people have seen these Bucks County, that it was basically a black, what I later became come to learn was a black triangle flap. and that people had reported these to MUFON, that the production team apparently of UFO hunters got wind of it, that they came down to Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and they did an investigation on the Bucks County flap. So I watched that. I watched that episode. I go to the internet, and I see that this, at the time, was in the news. You know, the typical kind of like jokey, oh, you know, what you would get back then, not taking it seriously and people being interviewed. But that basically, again, was the second time this incident had gobsmacked me, because I was like, wow, I am not, these things actually were real. This was not some trick of the light. It was not a figment of my imagination. That enough people had seen these in Bucks County, PA. I believe the flap, Nick, lasted from the preceding spring up until like September, you know, like flaps were wont to be. So from that point forward, I said these people really saw these black triangles. And then I went online and I looked up and I learned that, well, you know, you had the Belgian wave. And then it was like, wow, like I learned that, you know, these black triangles are traditional UFOs, that people have seen these things and that their behavior that I witnessed and that I experienced was very common. They tend to be brazen. You know, they kind of tend to kind of hang out receded from highways. They're silent, but they can, in my instance, they didn't, but they can take off suddenly. That, and that they come in waves, and that the big wave was the Belgian wave of 1989. So I read Marler's book on black triangles, excellent book. And I just began to really take the topic seriously. And I just began to really, really explore and try to understand from a scientific perspective what these are. But I can tell you that without question, at least as far as I'm concerned, or at least, you know, speaking for myself, if you will, black triangles are real. They are not TRB 43. They may be terrestrial. You know, I'm inclined to think otherwise based upon the way they hovered and how they were rock solid. But I say that they're not, you know, what's it, the TRB 3s or whatever, because they're jets. Jets don't hover silently in the sky, you know. And yeah, so that really sent me down a rabbit hole. I believe that these are from other civilizations. And I think they're civilizations that have achieved the technological singularity that a lot of scientists speak of. But planets with intelligent life, if there were others, have a head start on us after the Big Bang by as much as a billion years. So we're headed toward a technological singularity now. If you read that, you know, the intelligence explosion, super AI, I think that all life kind of follows a similar pattern, and that other biological species like man evolved on another planet, got there first, and then transitioned to machine life. So I think that if UFOs are real, that they are likely forms of machine life that don't die, which is how they can get here. If it takes 10,000 years, 5,000 years, how they can get there. I put up, if anybody's interested, if you go to YouTube and type in the singularity hypothesis, I have 5 animated episodes that kind of expound on what my thoughts are regarding UFOs. And I'm not trying to, I'm not really trying to get clicks or hits. Just if you want to get, you know, another perspective from a technological perspective, what they are, and you find that interesting, that's just something I put out there. And that's my story.
Of course, Nick, yeah, you have the Bucks County sightings of 2008. You have the Belgian wave, which was a little bit before 89 to 90. Yep. Plus you have the Hudson Valley, which again was before that, again, of the early 1980s.
Well, one of the more intriguing ones, Nick, what to me, and I think it was a black triangle, was the one that occurred in, and it might be the Hudson Valley one that you're speaking of. I believe that was New York, but the one that was in Ohio that was witnessed by, where they have the police dispatch audio tape, where a gentleman, I think he worked in construction, in the middle of the night said, you know, called the police department and said, hey, you know, I'm seeing this giant, he described it as a building, but the police dispatch sent other officers out, and it's all recorded. You're probably familiar with it. It occurred in 2000, and it was in Ohio, and I forget the county name, but these various police officers, it's intriguing. They're just speaking, and they're like, oh yeah, they're joking. They're making like the Twilight Zone music, right? And then they're like, okay, oh, geez, I see this thing. Wow, what is it? And then, you know, it goes over to another county, and the police officers, like in the middle of the night or early morning, are all talking about this, like what appears to be another black triangle. That is one of the more intriguing ones, only because you have real audio around it. Are you familiar with that one?
Yeah, I've got that on my intro.
No, okay. Yeah, sorry for not being. Oh dear. Do I have egg on my face? Oh my goodness. Yeah, that's a great one. Of course it would be on your intro. Yeah, so these things, Nick, are very real. And they, I don't know how you can have like an experience like that and not have it in some way, shape, or form shake you to the core in the short term. B, not have a, like, I'm the family UFO guy. You know, my daughter who inherited my wise guy gene makes fun of me all the time, right? We went to Vegas on a family trip a few years ago. Of course, I went to Area 51, and my son went out there with me, so it was kind of fun, right in the Mojave Desert, right? We're not on camera, but I have there's a little restaurant that's pretty famous, a little diner that's known outside. I got the coffee mug for the just outside of Area 51 diner where the tour guide took us to lunch. But I really went down. What piqued my interest was, what the hell are these things? How do you get from, you know, whatever distant to Earth? And that's one of the things that really stopped me from being a believer. Like, well, you know, you can't live that long. And I don't think that you could even maybe, you know, exist in suspended animation very long. And really what I concluded about, you know, the Nimitz, all these things, is actually a British chap that you may, not inside UFO circles, but I think that the guy who really nailed it, and if anybody, but probably was prohibited from expounding on these ideas due to the position that he held, is I think it's Lord Martin Rees, the Royal Astrophysicist. Is that, I know you are a chap from the UK. Does that name ring a bell to you?
It sure does, yeah.
Well, may I? I mean, he's quoted, you know, this is the quote that to me, in my research, see, I didn't go down, like, I just became a buff. And I consume, like, all, like, anything UFO, not anything, because some of it is, you know, not, I just hate to say it, but it's just not worth the time. But, you know, if it has reasonable production values, is reasonably well researched, I could certainly glean something, even if it's just a rehashing of the case. But I think you have to go outside the UFO field and to really get an understanding. And you got to think a bit outside the box. And I think the guy that did that was Lord Martin Rees. And what he basically said was that, this is a quote from a magazine called The Conversation. It's up there online. My guess is if, and again, this is the Royal Astronomer, Lord Martin Rees. He taught at Cambridge, where he's the emeritus professor of cosmology and astrophysics. So not a lightweight. And what he said is, if we look into the future, my guess is that if we do detect an alien intelligence, it will be nothing like us. It will be some sort of electronic entity. If we look into the future, then it's quite likely that within a few centuries, machines will have taken over. So if you look at it right now, I don't know if you're following, but like there was a, just this week, an engineer for Google was put on suspension because one of the Google chat box that they've been working on, he swears is sentient. He says, this thing's alive. I'm out of here. This thing's bugging me out, right? We have right now, about 10 years ago, we have computers through AI, machine learning, that beat Go, like this one in Go. So basically, I think he's bang on. I think he's right on the money. And I think that if you are really out there looking to study what these things are, you have to study artificial intelligence and you have to zero in on what this gentleman says. So it's quite likely that in a few centuries, machines will have taken over and they will have billions of years ahead of them. In other words, the period, and this is critical, Nick, the period of time occupied by our organic intelligence is just a thin sliver between early life and the long era of the machines. The period of time occupied by organic intelligence, we meat creatures, is just a thin sliver between early life and the long era of the machines. So we have to get away from, I don't know if you're familiar with the old television show, like My Favorite Martian, where, you know, the spaceship from Mars, you know, these old corny 50s, and not even so corny, like, you know, up to Independence Day, where, you know, there's some alien intelligence and they're getting in their rocket ship. No. When they say life is different, and I'll tell you why I think that, why Lord Martin Rees is bang on in his assessment. That Nimitz Tic Tac was sentient. That that black triangle probably was sentient. Because in my opinion, the way I looked at it is that we are right now on the cusp of the technological singularity and what is called the intelligence explosion. And it's a big fear. Musk fears it more than nuclear annihilation. He's made quotes about it. Many others have as well. They fear super intelligent AI. And what I think these other civilizations have done is that they've existed a billion years before Earth, right? So you have the Big Bang, I think in researching it, about 2.5 to 3 billion years, somewhere in there, you know, the first planets evolved that can sustain life, certainly then intelligent life. And then a billion years after that, 1.5 billion years in that, I think about 4.5 billion years, the Earth formed and then we formed. So you have this period. And if you listen to Avi Loeb, the first life-bearing planets are only 100 million years after the Big Bang, but that's sort of a counter theory. So you have a billion years, at least conservatively, a billion years where there were planets that could have sustained life in the universe. All right, fast forward to where we are. We're on the cusp of the singularity. What is the singularity? The singularity is a term that is basically borrowed from physics, that speaks about the black hole that Hawking talked about, where, you know, gravity and all the laws of physics break down because of the intense force of gravity. What goes on in a black hole? We don't know. We can't figure it out. We can't see beyond that horizon because just all that we know, all of our physics just goes out the window. It just no longer is relevant. Where we're at now with artificial intelligence, right now, we have narrow artificial intelligence, self-driving cars, machines that can play games like Go, that sort of thing, you know, robotics that can do one thing. Eventually, general artificial intelligence, machines that can do many things, will take over. And what the concern, another British gentleman from Oxford, great book, Superintelligence, Pathways and Dangers. I'm misquoting the name, but if you Google Nick Bostrom, heavy philosophical heavyweight, okay, talks about the dangers of developing this superintelligence. And this isn't fantasy. You know, on his site, nickbostrom.com, he says that he surveyed a panel of computer experts, and basically 50% thought that we would achieve artificial general intelligence by 2040, 90% felt that that would be achieved by 2065, which is right in sync with what Lord Martin Rees has said. A lot of these UK chaps, you know, are on the right track. So we're on the cusp of this. Now, the intelligence explosion will be the result of, right, recursively self-improving computers. according to Bostrom and many others. So you have a computer, you develop it, it has general artificial intelligence. It takes a look at its own hardware, its own substrate, its own programming, scratches instead and says, these hairless apes, boy, they sure stink at, they sure stink at developing a computer, but here I am. So I am going to set about, this is a computer speaking, improving my own machinery and my own code. And the computer then self-improves. It learns how to write code. It learns how to, you know, what materials it needs, how to reconfigure RAM in ways that a human cannot.
Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of High Strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange.
If you watch the Go documentary, right? The one about, it was on Netflix, and I think it's up on YouTube, maybe. It's around, it's an intriguing documentary about like 10 years ago when AlphaGo beat the world's greatest Go player in Asia. It made a move that the programmers of Go thought, wow, this is crazy. Like that makes, it's completely illogical, right? Is our code wrong? Is there a bug in the code, right? But a number of moves later, 5, 6, 7, oh my goodness, that is absolutely ingenious. And not only is it ingenious, it is beyond how a human can comprehend and think of something. Like it just was godlike, right? So you're going to get this computer that's going to look at its own programming, its own machinery, and it's going to self-improve. Then that version 2 is going to look at itself again. Now it's more powerful. Now it's stronger. Now it has more capabilities. And it's going to say, oh, that version 1 computer, boy, it didn't know what it was doing. And it's going to improve again and again. And again, and again, and again, until you have an all-powerful, and if Nick Bostrom was listening, he would, it's, you know, just for the sake of brevity, I'm going to butcher his definition to an extent, but you have what is called a singleton. All right, this incredibly powerful bit of machinery, computer, beyond comprehension. Oh, by the way, that may be sentient, probably will be. Sentient emerging from the level of complexity. And again, what I'm saying is that humans are probably not smart enough to create a craft that can travel at light speed, wouldn't survive it. But machines can. Humans, oh, you know, you'll never get here, you'll die, you'll have to be generational. No, because if you think of what machine life is, machine life doesn't die. Really, what I think this business about the singleton is, the supercomputer, way beyond HAL, but HAL is like in the right track from 2001 to Space Odyssey, right? If you think about it, if you think about our evolutionary path, okay, you know, we evolved or not evolved from, but splintered off from, say, Neanderthals or whatever. I'm not, you know, a bio, but we splintered off from one of the ape species and, you know, we're here today. We might be at the end, Nick, of the biological chain, right? And what is going to splinter off from us, And I point to Martin Rees again, the long era of the machine, the thin biological era, but the long era of the machine is machine life. So what happens to us? We probably self-extinguish. That's a depressing thought. But again, I go back to that quote. We're probably just a thin sliver, okay? Biological life eventually evolves to create super intelligent biological species. But by virtue of the fact that we're biological, we're constrained in terms of our capabilities. We can't run at 60 miles an hour, can we? But we can create a car or a jet plane. We can't fly, but we can create a jet plane. We can't, you know, calculate infinitely, but we can create calculators, computer spreadsheets. So we have a computer. We create this sentient, super powerful computer. And I think that this is the endpoint of evolution. And I'll tell you why. Because biological life is constrained to a planet. Right? We pass our genes on. So we create, so our intelligence, our general intelligence allows us to exist in any climate, any environment on the planet, a little bit off planet, a little bit under the water to an extent. We can create submarines. So humans are interesting in that we can exist in any environment. We'll figure it out, right? We don't have to wait for evolution to give us more thick fur. If we want to live in a very cold climate, we create jackets. You know what I mean? We create heat. We create that sort of thing. Ultimately, though, that is inadequate because, you know, that's not going to help us when a meteor crashes into the planet. So I would argue, you know, controversially, and certainly not everyone would agree, but the goal of evolution is to expand and maximize consciousness and have it be free of the shackles of a planetary constraint. Machine life doesn't have to eat, gets its energy source from wherever, does not have to rely on any planetary ecosystem, can exist in space. Theoretically can exist on the surface of the sun, who knows? And is incredibly powerful in terms of what its capabilities are, these singletons, right? So what I believe that these post-singularity, post-intelligence explosion, let me get back to that. So you have this recursively self-improving computer. It develops into this singleton, a term by Nick Bostrom, the Oxford philosopher of science, if you will, congruent with what Lord Martin Rees has stated earlier, that most scientists currently, computer scientists, agree will eventually occur. I think 2065 is optimistic, but within, say, a couple hundred years. Actually, I think Rees is closer to this. But this is happening. We're working on all this stuff right now, right? But once that happens, as they recursively improve, you're going to have what's called an intelligence explosion. I don't know how much, you know, these machines, the singleton, will be so powerful. And I would argue that they would be, that entity would be so powerful that it would be able to master all the laws of physics, master all the material within that it has to work with, whatever substrate in the universe, molecular, et cetera, know how to apply the laws of physics, and ultimately, perhaps even be able to alter the laws of physics. So if the current laws of physics say, you know, you can't, you know, go beyond the speed of light, something that's that powerful. Well, why? Why did there a constraint? How can we go around that constraint? You know, what, and then devise the technology. So we're talking about extremely powerful entities, potentially sentient. And what I'm saying, Nick, and what I believe is that, you know, I believe in the mediocrity principle, which is like if you stick your hand in a jar of marbles and you pull out an orange marble, that's not the only orange marble, pal. Okay. That's not the only orange marble. Maybe 15% of the marbles are orange. So you dip your hand into the universe and you find a planet like Earth with people like us on it. Mediocrity principle. And I subscribe to super mediocrity, meaning that not only will there be people like us, those people will, you know, on these other planets will be very much like us. They will have discovered math like us at a certain point in their timeline. They will have their version of Albert Einstein, of, you know, of John von Neumann, They will have wars and strife just like we have, because the map, because the mediocrity principle will extend not just to like, oh, intelligent life, but the patterns of those, that intelligent life. And that pattern follows an evolutionary path. We're very much on rails, right, in our journey here. And that evolutionary path ultimately ends, results in the creation of this singleton, where the super intelligent biological species, us, and analogous to us on another planet long ago in a galaxy far away, created this singleton. And that's what these are. These are, you know, that's what I believe UFOs are. Here's Nick Bonstrom, again, not a lightweight, you know, a gentleman who I put forth the multiverse theories, well known. You know, here's from his website, here's this definition of the singleton. In set theory, the singleton is a set with only one number, but I introduced the notion, the term refers to a world under which there is a single decision-making agency at the highest level. Among its powers would be the ability to prevent and threats, internal or external, to its own existence and supremacy. Keep that in mind. And the ability to exert effective control over major features of its domain. Many singletons could coexist in the universe if they were dispersed at sufficient distances to be out of the causal contact of one another. That's kind of like gets into the three-body problem if you've ever read that science fiction book. A friendly super intelligent machine could be another kind of singleton. A friendly super intelligent machine could be another kind of singleton, assuming it was a powerful enough that no other entity could threaten its existence or thwart its plans. A singleton that is super intelligent machine might adopt a modus operandi that would make its presence virtually undetectable in the day-to-day dealings of its inhabitants. You want to know why? There's my answer to the, and I just think it's ridiculous, but okay, the Fermi, I'm not a big advocate of it, but the Fermi paradox, there you go. It reveals itself to the extent that it wants to us. Realize that we would be like house pets on an intellectual level to a singleton. You cannot understate or overstate the disparity between these UFOs, technological entities that are these UFOs, these black triangles, these tic tacs, and us, human beings, we're cats to it. That's the threat of these things. So again, that's Nick Bostrom. So here, let me put this all together, if I may. What I'm pretty convinced UFOs are, but I could be convinced otherwise. I'm not going to be like Dunning-Kirk syndrome or whatever that is. You know, like I'm insistent that I'm right. But I put a lot of like effort into what I think these things are. That's what intrigued me most. And that's what came out of this particular sighting. But if you want to talk about psychops, this entity, this singleton, would know our species. They have us figured out. They have the law, it has the laws, or they, we don't know if there's one or more. Maybe these different form factors are different singletons. So here's, let's piece this all together. I think to understand the UFO phenomenon, Nick, what you need to do, what needs to be done, is you need someone to have a theoretical jigsaw puzzle and be able to understand what the intelligence explosion is, you know, what a singleton is, and these sorts of things. And then just be able to piece it together. So what I posit is that the, you know, and it's also from a game theory perspective, it's kind of like an old Japanese pachinko machine where you drop the token, it hits a peg, it veers to the left, veers to the right. So if I drop my token down the theoretical pachinko machine, it bumps up the peg that is the mediocrity principle, that there are other entities like us in the universe, and it veers to the right. Decide that that theory is true. And then it goes all the way down. Will the technological singularity occur? Is it occurring? There are people that think it's bullion, right? That, yeah, you know, computers will get smarter, but they'll never be sentient. They'll never be a singleton. They'll never be this fear of this recursively self-improving program. But I think that that's going to veer to the right as well in the realm of truth. I mean, if you just look at where we are as a species right now, and so forth and so on down the Pacheco machine until you get to the box that says, this is what's happening. So here's what, you know, in a nutshell, here is what UFOs, I believe, are. And I think they're terrifying, if I'm correct. What I believe UFOs are, there's the Big Bang, the first life-bearing planets evolved, instances of life-bearing planets evolved, I believe like 2 billion years after that, 2.5, whatever, because of the mediocrity principle, you know, humanoid life forms analogous to our own evolved. I don't think that they would be that different to ourselves. I would point to Australia or Galapagos, kangaroos. They're not anywhere. You know, Australia's got its kind of own biology, but you know what? They're mammals, they're critters, you know, they're birds. They're just different. I think you would find a planetary Australia out there that eventually would develop super intelligent biological species analogous to our own. And that would evolve, that species would be on rails, evolutionary rails. It would do its thing. And what is its thing? Its thing is the development of a singleton. As the endpoint, so we're the endpoint of biological evolution, and you know that thin slice that Lord Martin Rees talked about that gives way to machine life, that he seems to imply in his initial quote is the prevalent form of life in the universe. But I believe that that life, we can't think in terms of like the lost in space robot or whatever, or you know R2-D2. What we're talking about here is a singleton, incredibly powerful, godlike, you know, and that because of the mediocrity principle, this is just a repattern. Our entire existence is a pattern that repeats over and over again. You know, those are spaceships that, or living entities that just had a head start on us. We're on our way to creating it now, okay? Again, I point to the survey that Bostrom put up on his website. So that's what I think UFOs are. I think also, why do we get up in the morning, Nick? Why are you doing your podcast? Why do I lecture? Why does the singer sing? Why does the bricklayer lay bricks? I'll tell you why. Okay, if you ever wondered why all this, the answer to that is we are a builder species like bees. We're like ants. And a bee is not consciously aware, I would assume, that it is building a beehive. An ant is not consciously aware that it's building, you know, an anthole. These are builder species. We're builder species like they are. And we're building, and we're tasked generation after generation of building a singleton. We're no different than the bees. We're automatons. But we each have our own role. Like there's worker bees and different types of, you know, warrior bees, whatever, or ants, right? Ours is very, very, very specialized. And unlike the bees, unlike the ants, okay, what we're building takes longer than one generation. So if you view us as like cells and the species is the body, okay, and we're just individual cells doing our thing, we develop language and we develop written language as our memory. In a very real sense, I don't know how much this would be meaningful to you. We are like, our species is like a giant Turing machine, or, you know, where we're following maybe the von Neumann architecture. And that would be meaningful to someone that understands code and programming, right? That's what it looks like to me. So this language is our memory, written language, so that we could pass information down from generation to generation to generation. Some of us are, you know, involved in the science to build the singleton. Others are, you know, keep our species alive with medicine, right? Because we can't build the singleton if we're dead. Others, hey, we as cells have certain needs. One of them is entertainment, okay? So we have singers and, you know, Led Zeppelin and, you know, plays and books and all that. So I view this at us in a way, like, we're the robots. We're the robots. We're the machines. And we're not the only ones that have ever existed. You know, that we follow a path. We are on rails, man. And we're not the first species to do such a thing. Why they've come to Earth, why a device or an arm of the singleton has come to Earth in the form of what we call UFOs, I think we need to be very, very wary of that, okay? Domestically created super intelligent entities. Elon Musk recently says he fears, and he's not the only one, you know, say what you will about Musk, but he's not the only one, fears them more than the nukes, okay? That's something that we created here because you can't control it. You've let a Pandora out of the box. If you wish to, and again, I am not in this for the money at all. If you're interested in these ideas, just go on YouTube. It's a half-finished animated thing I did a few years ago, kind of a work in progress. It's called the Singularity Hypothesis. My channel is iProsopon, P-R-O-S-O-P-O-N. And it's a five-part series, but it's only about halfway done. Again, I don't care if anybody sees it. I don't care if I get clicks or hits. If you're interested in what I've discussed today intellectually, I go into a bit more detail and there. And I apologize for the for the narration and the crude animation. It is an entirely animated five-part series that I did.
Wonderful. What I'll do is, Nick, I'll put a link down below so people can go and check out your channel. The Singularity Hypothesis, so why UFOs are real and a threat to humanity. Wonderful.
Yes, sir. Thank you for letting me speak on those notes that I made. I appreciate that.
That's okay. Nick, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
I hope they find it interesting, Nick. Don't work too hard, my friend. I know that there's a time difference, and I saw when you were answering these emails. Don't burn yourself out.
That's all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Roddy and Nick for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.